And now it's time for On Our Minds. This week, journalist Dan Fagan. He just won a Pulitzer Prize for his book, Tom's River. It's a true story, a remarkable tale of industrial pollution and its health impacts for people in a small New Jersey town. Fagan told Steve Paulson why it's hard to prove the long-term health effects of environmental toxins.
For a long time, not much happened in Tom's River, and then the chemical industry came to town in the early 1950s in the form of a huge factory that was, at the time, one of the largest dye manufacturing facilities in the world.
And this factory was actually dumping chemicals right into the local river.
They were. I mean, the nature of dye manufacturing, especially then, is that you actually generate a lot more liquid waste than actual dye. There was solid waste that would go into sort of open pits all over this property, almost two square miles. There was air pollution that would go up the smokestacks. But the biggest pollution problem of all was this liquid waste, and just in tremendous, tremendous volumes. One of the reasons that SIBA, the Swiss company that controlled Tom's River Chemical, picked the site to begin with was that the soil was sandy. That was a wonderfully efficient way to get rid of liquid waste, is just to dump it.
Was this all legal then?
The context, the legal context is, depending on how you interpreted the laws, it was probably mostly legal. But later, on into the 80s and 90s, it was not. There were a series of legal conflicts with the regulators. Meanwhile, there was a whole other thing happening too, Steve, which is there were a lot of illegal dump sites. People would take waste down from Newark and Jersey City and places like that and just dump it in the middle of the forest. And there was a guy, a really disreputable guy, who told Union Carbide, "Don't worry, I'll take this waste off your hands." And he just dumped it in the back 2 acres of a chicken farm. And that became a second horrendous Superfund site in addition to the SIBA site. Hmm. So to finally get around to the health implications, starting in the 1980s, people started to say, gee, I think we have a problem here in Tom's River. There was a woman named Linda Gillick who, her son was diagnosed with a neuroblastoma when he was just a few months old.
What are the symptoms of that?
It's a cancer of the central nervous system. At the time, Michael's chances of survival were very poor, so much so that the Gillicks even bought a casket for Michael, because when the time came, they didn't want to have to buy a casket. But Michael defied the odds. He's still alive today. He's in his mid-30s now.
Wow.
And Linda started looking around, and you know, every time she would go to a hospital in Philadelphia or New York and to get the advanced cancer treatment, every time she would go, she would meet other people from Tom's River. She said, something is going on here. Something's going on here.
And it's worth pointing out, I mean, she's not a doctor or a scientist or a health professional. She's a mother. And she just sort of took this upon herself.
She's a grade school teacher.
To do this.
Yeah, she's a grade school teacher. And I should say, it wasn't just her. Other people were looking around and sort of saying, gee, this doesn't seem right. One of the most influential people, as it turned out, to notice this was a nurse at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia named Lisa Bornazian. You know, they would have sort of black humor on the pediatrics ward. Oh, another kid from Tom's River. And she would say to the physicians, what's going on here? And the physicians would say, oh, it's nothing. You're just a nurse. Do your job, you know. And it turned out that Lisa had a sister-in-law who worked for the EPA. Her sister-in-law finally got the ball rolling. And an investigation began in the mid-1990s.
Hmm. The way you've told the story, it would seem like, oh, it's sort of an open and shut case, you know, chemicals being dumped into the water there, massive amounts, and all of these childhood cancers popping up in this town of Tom's River. But it's not so simple. In fact, it's incredibly difficult to prove the cause and effect here.
It is. It's very difficult. For the core area of Tom's River, it was multiple, 3 or 4 times what's expected. The thing is, though, Steve, that because childhood cancer is relatively rare, there's going to be a lot of natural fluctuation. You know, nothing in nature is evenly distributed. It's sort of like if you were conducting a poll to see who was going to be president, but you only talked to 5 or 6 people. You would get a result, but you don't know whether those numbers are reliable or not. They would have a very large margin of error. And, well, that's true for epidemiology, too.
So how do scientists actually prove that there is a cancer cluster that's more than just random cases that happen to sort of be in this one area?
Right. And it's sort of a whole cascade of tests that you do. One of the most important things that you look for is what's called the dose response. So if you think that you have an environmentally induced cancer cluster, you ought to see a pattern where the higher the exposures were, the greater the number of cases should be. Sure enough, they found that in Toms River. And the other thing they did in Toms River that was really quite interesting was they constructed very elaborate computer models of both the air pollution and water pollution to try to figure out which parts of town were highest exposed and which were not. And then they took those exposures and tried to match them up with the cases. And again, they found very strong associations. Hmm. So now you use the word proof. An epidemiologist would never use the word proof. It's about strength of association. And ultimately, to everyone's shock, they found that there was indeed statistically significant pattern of associations.
So what was the upshot of all of this? There were lawsuits and a settlement, right?
Yeah, there was never actually a lawsuit per se. I mean, some of your listeners would be familiar with the book and the movie Civil Action, and John Travolta played the attorney Jan Schlickman, and Jan was involved in this case too. And if you remember the Civil Action story, you know that Jan literally lost his shirt. He lost everything he owned on that case. And
because it's so costly to try to
incredibly
prove a case
costly
like this.
And also he was somewhat reckless in the way that he approached the case. So he wanted to learn from that mistake, and he wanted to try to find a negotiated settlement that would be short of the sort of slash and burn courtroom warfare that he practiced and lost in Woburn, Massachusetts.
To basically get what you can. I mean, you have to compromise here.
You have to compromise, and that was a hard thing for the families involved. They wound up with financial settlements that, you know, ranged somewhere around $100,000 for the lowest settlements to around $500,000 or $600,000 for the higher settlements. You know, to me, is that adequate compensation for what they went through? I don't think so. But it was what they could achieve. The plant closed down. The dye manufacturing and plastics manufacturing moved first to Alabama and now to China. So, you know, we've sort of outsourced our environmental problems to some extent. We're happy to get those blue jeans made in China, and to some extent we're subsidizing the same kind of environmental practices over there.
Although, so you're saying probably the same kind of dumping is happening now in a place like China.
In China, the phenomenon is often called cancer villages because the Chinese cities are so vast and sprawling that you couldn't identify a cluster even if you tried. But in the village, people actually know their neighbors, and so it is possible to try to map potentially environmentally induced illnesses. So that's happening in China right now.
Now, you have a very sobering comment in your book. You say that the chief legacy of this story is to solidify governmental opposition to conducting more investigations like the one in Toms River. In other words, it was so time-consuming, so draining that maybe government investigators just don't want to do this again. It's just, you know, too much work, too difficult.
Yeah. These things are very expensive. They are, as you said, draining, emotionally draining, and they're also very politically damaging for the politicians involved. You get the big companies angry at you. You get the voters angry at you because they want clearer answers than you're able to give them. But my own view is that we need way more epidemiology, not less. Toms River is a much safer place now. What I was trying to say with that sentence, government officials feel this way, but they're wrong. They're acting based on their own short-sighted motivations, not what's in the long-term best interests of public health.
Dan Fagan just won a Pulitzer Prize for his book, Toms River. Steve Paulson talked with him. And that's what's on our minds today. We post new On Our Minds segments every day. You can check them out at ttbook.org or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. The handle's ttbook1.